Welcome to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. Carol Gold is an inspirational speaker, author, change agent, and former family law attorney who helps individuals and organizations by providing guidance and encouragement during periods of professional and personal change. Her fearlessness in facing challenges head-on is contagious, inspiring, and uplifting, and she understands the importance of the principles of personal responsibility and adaptability within the larger context of our connection to one another. Engaging and empowering, Carol brings the highest message to all concerned and leaves her audiences with renewed determination to be the best they can be. As she explores the topics of ethics, mission, purpose, intuition, stress management, and relationships. Carol's recently released book, The Lightworker's Handbook, A Spiritual Guide to Eliminating Fear, serves as a simple explanation and user-friendly guide to navigating the changes taking place around us. Her mission is to give people a renewed sense of empowerment and excitement about the possibilities that await them, regardless of their present situations. Carol's goal is not that you see things her way, but rather to help you find your way. To learn more, visit her website at carolgold.com. That's carolegold.com. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning, Carol Gold. You're listening to WNJC 1360 AM, and this is An Hour of Gold. The number here, 856-227-1360. Welcome your calls. I'm going to talk this morning about several things. I'm very excited about a couple of the topics that I'm going to cover this morning. Some of them are related to the tragic tornadoes that are happening out in the Midwest, and some additional thoughts on Arnold Schwarzenegger and on Strauss Kahn, the head of the International Monetary Fund. But before I get to any of that, and on any of those topics, you're welcome to call in this morning. Before I get to any of that, I want to talk to you about what happened at 4 a.m. this morning, because it's a interesting lead-in to the topic that I was actually going to cover in the majority of the show this morning, which is greed, talking about what greed is and how it affects us in our daily lives. But ironically, I woke up this morning at 4 a.m. and immediately felt I had to go downstairs to my computer and write a blog post. I write an inspirational blog 5 days a week at my website, Carol, C-A-R-O-L-E, gold.com. And what I was inspired to write came from some thoughts that I had had after watching coverage of the tornado havoc that had been wreaked on the Middle West, on Joplin, Missouri, I guess it is. Is it Joplin, Missouri? It is. It's Joplin, Missouri. Checking here with support staff at the station. And I thought about how environmentalists and even some politicians, commentators, whatever, are often saying that Earth or Mother Earth is reacting perhaps to our use and abuse of her over time, and that that's where all of this violent weather is coming from. And what happened when I woke up at 4 a.m. was I realized, or at least I had the thought, what if the Earth isn't reacting to what we've done, but is actually responding to our thoughts? Meaning this, if you'll allow me at the moment to get a little technical, at the quantum level, quantum physicists have been able to determine that a conscious observer who's watching an experiment affects the outcome of that experiment. So when a person's consciousness walks into a room, it actually affects what occurs in that room. Because without consciousness present, just measuring molecules at the subatomic level, you get one result. But if you bring a conscious observer in and perform the same test, you get a different result. And so what they've come to learn is that consciousness, our thoughts, our awareness actually affects physical matter. So I woke up thinking about this and I said, well, wait a minute. what we're dealing with around the globe, whether it's a volcano erupting in Iceland or a tsunami in Japan or tornadoes in Missouri, what we're dealing with is violence, violence manifested through nature. But let's look around the world. What we're dealing with is violence. The entire Middle East is, to coin that phrase, on fire, or not to coin it, but to repeat it, that the one we've heard so much recently, the Middle East is on fire. Well, it's on fire because there's a great deal of rage. There's a great deal of anger. And it isn't just in the Middle East. I mean, there's anger and rage all over the world. And so if one person's thought can affect an experiment, what about millions or billions of people thinking the same thing, meaning thinking about violence, being enraged? What does that consciousness do? Because on a conscious level, we're all connected. I mean, that's what telepathy is. The ability to read thought is simply the ability to tune in like AM or FM and get the station you're tuning into. So what does it mean that the world can be so angry that we can actually manifest that, and where we see it happening is in nature? So I started to think about President Obama when he encouraged more revolution when Egypt started. I mean, he actually encouraged revolution. And while he may have meant that in a very positive sense, while he may have meant, overturning dictatorships and eliminating tyranny is a good thing. When you encourage revolution, when you see the kind of violence that we saw in Egypt, and then we encourage more of that, are we not spreading that thought that violent revolution is a way to achieve an end? And if enough people think about it and enough people keep their attention on it, because that's what consciousness is, it's our awareness, it's our attention. When we put our attention on something, our attention is energy. And so our energy begets energy, and the energy I fear that we're begetting is violence, and we're seeing it in nature, not because we've pushed nature to a limit where we're attributing, first of all, to nature human qualities when we say that nature would, in essence, get even or would respond to our abuse or neglect of it. I think it makes infinitely more sense that it's our constant focus on violence, by the way, as perpetuated by the media, because remember, that's not what we do here at An Hour of Gold. What I do at An Hour of Gold is I look at these stories around the world. I look at the rage and the anger and stories that have negative vibrations, for lack of a better word, negative reverberations. They leave a wake of negativity behind them. We see those stories over and over every day. But what I do here at An Hour of Gold is find the highest message, find the positive takeaway. What can we take away from these stories that enlivens us, makes us feel better, helps us create a better world? And so maybe the message from the tornadoes that we can take away, separate from the incredible charity and compassion that we are seeing by other people in the area who survived or volunteers who are coming into the area, separate from the obvious, which is tragedy can bring out the best in humanity, and it certainly historically brings out the best in Americans because that's who we are and that's what we're made of. Separate from that, maybe there's another positive takeaway, and that is we need to change what we're thinking about, and we need to change how we see the world changing so that we stop manifesting and creating more violence. My book that was recently released called A Lightworker's Handbook, A Spiritual Guide to Eliminating Fear, is called that for a reason. Separate from what I address in the book in terms of eliminating fear, I call it a lightworker's handbook because to me, a lightworker is how I define myself and probably how I define most of you out there. You're tuning in because you want to approach things differently. You're awake now. You're no longer semi-conscious or unconscious. You're awake. You are the light. You are bringing in the light. And that's what I do here, is to try to shine light and bring light to otherwise negative or dark, for lack of a better word, situations. So I'm addressing what's happening in Missouri, and I'm addressing what's happening around the world with violence and rage, and say we can see what we're doing with that by looking at other areas where we're seeing violence and rage emerge, and I think we're seeing it in nature. And I bet we can turn it around if we turn around our thoughts, because collectively we have a lot of power, and it starts individually with each one of us. The overall theme that this leads into for me is this concept of greed. And I want to talk about greed because last week, for those of you who are listening, you'll recall I talked about the abuse of power, the use and the misuse of power, or actually the improper use of power, which is application of force, because force is very different than power. And this week, I wanted to talk about greed. And before I get to greed, what I wanted to lead into is actually to lead into that with envy. I want to first talk about envy. Why? Because I think envy leads to greed. And I think the first place we see that historically is we see it with Cain and Abel. We see it between two brothers. And that prototype, that story of Cain and Abel, is still playing itself out today in the Middle East. And what we see is that one brother was envious of the other brother. And he was envious because both brothers brought their father an offering. And the father favored one offering over the other. And that simple act of favoring the one offer caused the other brother to be envious, to be jealous, and ultimately to slay his brother. Cain killed Abel out of his envy and his wanting something that his brother was getting that he wasn't getting. His brother was getting an acknowledgement and a form of praise and recognition and from the father that the other brother wasn't getting. And Cain took that to the extreme, and he allowed that those feelings of jealousy and envy and greed to run him to the point where he killed his brother. So I think envy does lead us into greed. We see things that other people have and we want them. And when we can't get them, it not only harbors ill feeling, but it leads us to feel that we have to fill up that emptiness in some way. And when you try to fill up an emptiness that way, it's kind of like a bottomless pit. It never quite gets filled. And so we always want more and more and more. And the irony is, or the cruel joke is that more is never enough. Because when you're not honest with yourself about what it is you're trying to do, you'll substitute other things to try to fill that void. And nothing is going to fill that void if you're not honest with yourself about where it's coming from. You know, Gandhi, who for me is one of the most heroic and admirable humans that I can turn to and look at for guidance in terms of his life and how he lived it. Gandhi said, "Earth provides enough to satisfy every man's need, but not every man's greed." So what we need is provided for us by Earth and by all of life's circumstances. But what we feel greed for, there's never enough to fill that hole. And I think that goes all the way back to Cain and Abel. And the way I look at it is, Cain was not satisfied with his portion, and neither often are we. So what's your portion? What's my portion? What do I even mean when I say, what's your portion? I'm going to get into that in just a moment after I share some thoughts with you about my sponsor and my favorite Italian restaurant, Stefano's in Mount Laurel.
Stefano's Ristorante Italiano of Mount Laurel, New Jersey, serves the finest authentic Sicilian cuisine with exciting dishes and a unique ambiance. At Stefano's, every dish is created using only the freshest, finest ingredients. Their delicious menu options and attention to detail create a truly enjoyable dining experience. For more than 20 years, chef and owner Paola Balsamo has presented her authentic family recipes to South Jersey. Stefano's features traditional Italian favorites and unique dishes wrapped in a cozy ambiance. They cater to special requests and offer a celiac specialty menu featuring gluten-free foods that are so delicious, you'll never believe they're gluten-free. They also have a large variety of delicious pizza. Please feel free to bring a bottle of wine to enjoy with your meal. And if you're hosting a party, Stefano's offers on-site and off-site catering options. Their catering menu offers many options to please any taste, and their impeccable service ensures your event will be one to remember. They cater corporate functions, as well as birthdays, graduations, anniversaries, and many other special occasions. Stefano's Ristorante Italiano at 3815 Church Road in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Open at 11 a.m. Monday through Saturday, closed Sunday. Call 856-778-3663. That's 856-778-3663. And visit their website, stefanosristoranteitaliano.com. And mention An Hour of Gold to receive a 10% discount. You're listening to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now let's get back to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold.
I've been talking about greed in the first quarter hour, and greed is simply an excess need for wealth, status, or power. And most times people pursue them through a manipulation of some kind of authority. And I was talking right before the break about what's your portion, because failure to be satisfied with your portion leads to this desire to acquire and achieve either more, which tends to never be enough, or to pursue things that are really the possession or the rightful ownership of someone else. So your portion, what's your portion? Well, everyone's portion is different. That's the tricky part. And what we need to learn to do is to become satisfied with our portion. So we're all born with blessings. We're all born with things that are unique to us and that seem easy for us in life. For some people, it's money. And for some people, it's notoriety. And for some people, it's a particular skill. And it manifests itself all different ways. But you have to be able to recognize what your blessings are and be grateful for them and appreciative for them, because that's your portion. You know, I write really easily. For some reason, the gift of being able to write comes very easily to me. But I'm not the most fiscally responsible person on the planet. For me, it's always a challenge to manage my finances. So my portion, in a sense, just to give you an example, using these two things, my portion is that I'm a gifted writer. And what's not my portion is that I am not as fiscally quick or as fiscally responsible. It doesn't come naturally to me. I have to work at that. Okay, but I'm grateful for my portion, and I don't begrudge someone else who has something I don't have, because I recognize that I'm given what I need to get through my life. It may not be what I want always, but I'm given what I need, because there's a difference between what we need and what we may greed after, if I can play a little bit with the language. So what's the difference? Well, I like to compare need, what I need, versus what I want. What I need, I compare to a concept called blessed anger. What's blessed anger? Blessed anger is if an animal is sitting in the jungle. Let's take a lion. A lion is sitting in the jungle, and it's relaxing. It's just hanging out under a tree. And walking toward it is a predator or an enemy. That lion who is leisurely sitting under the tree will allow that predator or that enemy to approach up to a point. And what is that point? That point is a line that animal, the lion, has drawn in its own mind based on instinct that says, that predator can approach me up to a certain point. When it crosses that point, it threatens the minimal amount of space I need to survive in. So up to the point that the predator crosses that line, the lion won't flinch. But if the predator crosses that line, it will lunge and attempt to rip that predator's throat out. Why? Because the animal knows, the lion knows, the minimal amount it needs to survive. We humans don't operate that way. That's need. What you need is your minimal amount of space, material things to survive. Minimal health, minimal resources, minimal food. We need what we need to survive. That's need. Greed is when we want in excess of what we need. And of course, greed has degrees. And for some people, it never stops. So there are some people who can never have enough of whatever it is they want. And we can see that most recently in examples that went down in the last week or so. If we look at Arnold Schwarzenegger or we look at Strauss Kahn, the head of the IMF, you know, last week I talked about those men in terms of the abuse of power, using force instead of power. But guess what? There's an aspect of greed to that behavior as well. And what it is this. Arnold Schwarzenegger had fame, he had notoriety as a movie star, as a governor, married to an accomplished, bright woman from a well-known family, from a political family. He had financial success. He had career success on many fronts. He had three or four children with Maria Shriver. And it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. He had to have more. He had to have another woman or maybe several women. He had to have another child. Now I'm hearing maybe more children. I'm not sure. But the point is, more was never enough. And the same thing for Strauss Kahn, the head of the IMF. He had a wife. He had one of the most powerful positions in the world. He obviously had financial success. He had career success. And it wasn't enough. He had to have another woman. He had to have more of what he wanted. And it's greed. It's a form of greed. And in his case, his ego was also completely off the charts, because what I've recently heard is that he actually said to this woman as he was attempting to force her to have sex with him, he said to her, "Don't you know who I am?" As if that made a difference in whether or not she would consent to forcible rape. It boggles the mind. But there's an aspect of greed to that kind of behavior, because it's this more is never enough. Whatever I have, I not only want more of it, I'm entitled to more of it. So we've seen it. We saw it with Tiger Woods. The same thing. You know, they talk about sex addiction and we talk about the misuse of power, and we say that rape is not a crime of sex, it's a crime of power. But I also think it's a crime of greed, in a sense, because it's never having enough and always wanting more of what you want and not imposing boundaries and not imposing behavior with respect for other people's boundaries and the minimal amount of space they need to survive in their world as well. So this concept of greed can not only be seen in those instances that I just mentioned, but which were more personal than anything else. But let's also look in the financial world. I don't know if you remember Ivan Boesky back in the 1980s, who was an arbitrageur on Wall Street and who spoke at the graduating class at Stanford University. And in his speech to the graduating MBA students said, "Greed is good. It's actually the basis for the movie Wall Street and the character that Michael Douglas played. Gordon Gekko, I think, was his name. I think there's even a recent revival of that movie or a sequel to that movie." We saw it in Ivan Boesky. This goes all the way back to the 80s when we started culturally to think that this was an okay way to be. And then Bernie Madoff recently. And he, all of the billions of dollars that he stole from people, because no matter how much he had, it wasn't enough. And we see it even on a small daily scale. You know, each of us has to take responsibility. How about merchants who aren't even happy with 100% markup on a product, who need to mark it up 200% and 300% and whatever the traffic will bear, because more is never enough? These are aspects of greed. And I was also thinking politically where we see it. We saw it in Roosevelt. You know, Franklin Roosevelt was our only president who was president for 3 terms. And his presidency, his 3rd term as a president, is actually the cause of the implementation of the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution, which limits the presidential term to 2 consecutive terms. Well, 2 terms, period. Why? Roosevelt became an egomaniac and could not put down the thought that only he could solve the Depression. So the office became not as important as the man holding it. He was greedy for power. He was greedy for his position and the power that came with it. And it's so easy to juxtapose him or contrast him with our first president, George Washington, who, when offered another term, said no. He declined, and the nation begged him to be president for another term. They wanted him to be king. They wanted to make Washington president for life. And he said, no, the office is more important than the man. And so we see political greed as well as financial greed, as well as personal greed. And I would even argue that we see it with Putin. I don't know if you've seen lately in the last day or two, but Vladimir Putin is now seeking the presidency, the premiership back to Russia, because Medvedev, who Putin put in office as his puppet, got too strong, and now he wants to remain in office, and Putin doesn't like the way things are going, so he's seeking power back again. And yes, it's power, but it's also greed. It's an insatiable desire for something that you cannot get enough of, and sometimes it's power, and sometimes it's wealth, and sometimes it's fame, but whatever it is, in the end, it's greed. And in a way, I have to also say our president, there's an aspect of that around his need to influence world politics. He can't even get our economy right. He can't even straighten out domestic problems and domestic policy. But he's out there on the world stage because he needs to affect the Middle East, and he needs to affect what's happening in Europe, and he needs to affect the euro and the dollar, and he needs to affect everything. Because in a sense, there's an aspect of greed there too. More is never enough. And it doesn't have to be about money. It can be about power. It can be about authority. It can be about a lot of things. And so why am I talking about it? And why am I talking about it in the context of everything that's happening today? Well, I think we have a really good example of greed in the Middle East. And there is also another really good example of your portion. What do you do when your portion to you seems insufficient, and when you see what someone else has as being more desirable than what you've been given? Is it okay to embark upon the kind of thinking that ultimately leads to violence as you justify why you want more than you already have? So I'm going to explore this right after this break.
You're listening to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. Carol Gold is an inspirational speaker, author, change agent, and former family law attorney who helps individuals and organizations by providing guidance and encouragement during periods of professional and personal change. Her fearlessness in facing challenges head-on is contagious, inspiring and uplifting, and she understands the importance of the principles of personal responsibility and adaptability within the larger context of our connection to one another. Engaging and empowering, Carol brings the highest message to all concerned and leaves her audiences with renewed determination to be the best they can be as she explores the topics of ethics, mission, purpose, intuition, stress management, and relationships. Carol's recently released book, The Lightworker's Handbook, A Spiritual Guide to Eliminating Fear, serves as a simple explanation and user-friendly guide to navigating the changes taking place around us. Her mission is to give people a renewed sense of empowerment and excitement about the possibilities that await them regardless of their present situations. Carol's goal is not that you see things her way, but rather to help you find your way. To learn more, visit her website at carolgold.com. That's C-A-R-O-L-E, gold.com. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now let's get back to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold.
Welcome back. I'm talking about greed and where it manifests in our society and why it matters and why what we think matters as well. And I think I left off talking about the Middle East when it came to greed and individuals or nations being content with their portion, so to speak. You know, when I look at the Middle East and I look at all of the Arab countries that have the wealth and the oil that provides the wealth that sustains them, I find it almost inconceivable that that's not enough, that the wealth, the incredible wealth that they're sitting on in the Arab world simply isn't enough. It isn't enough to raise the standard of living in their own countries, and it isn't enough for them to be able to live side by side with Israel, who's sitting on no oil and no wealth, and who has had to create and generate prosperity in the middle of the desert without water through ingenuity, through science, through creative thinking, through entrepreneurial businesship, through technology. And it is an example to me of not being content with your portion. Because what I don't see, I don't see Israel trying to expand. I don't see them trying to conquer neighboring lands, but I do see the oil-rich Arab countries unable to live side by side with a strip of land that is minuscule compared to the total area of land that encompasses all of the Arab oil-rich nations. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at the Middle East, and I know there are a lot of arguments around that. If we can take the historical argument of, you know, well, the Arabs were displaced, the Palestinians were displaced, and I can have all of those discussions because I know the history and I know what happened in 1948 and even before 48 with the British Mandate and the Balfour Declaration and the division of what was Transjordan into Transjordan and Palestine. I can have that discussion. I can also have the discussion of Jews that have been in that area of the world as far back as biblical times. There's always been a Jewish presence in the Middle East. And I bring this up not so much to talk about what should happen, what the resolution should be relative to the continued existence and prosperity of the State of Israel and the fate and the continued existence and prosperity of the Palestinian people. I don't bring it up so much in that regard as I bring it up around this concept of greed. Because when is enough enough, and how much land and do you really need in order to exist? Because I don't think what's happening in the Middle East is about existence. Because if it were about existence and if it were about quality of life, then certainly the Arab countries within themselves and on behalf of their Palestinian brethren, because remember that those Palestinians were living in what was fundamentally Transjordan, and should have and could have been absorbed at the time of the partition in 1948, could have been absorbed by the Jordanians and should have been absorbed by the Jordanians, but instead were left hanging out by all of their Arab brothers to become a problem for the Israelis. I don't bring it up so much in regard to how do we settle it now, because now we have a present moment problem that needs to be addressed. But I bring it up around the greater issue of greed, which is with all of the millions of acres of Arab land and all of the undeveloped acres of Arab land and all of the wealth in the Arab world, how is it possible that there's a starving or a homeless Palestinian? I don't understand. But then again, I don't understand how there's a starving Catholic in the world either. Because I remember 25 years ago going to the Vatican and going on tour of the Vatican. And as I went through the Vatican with this group, and I had a tour guide, and I remember one corridor in particular. I was being taken down this corridor with the group, and the tour guide was showing all of these glass cases that had crowns in them and gifts that had been given popes over the centuries by heads of state and wealthy individuals and devout Catholics who were wealthy. The incredible wealth that is in these cases, the gold, not the gold leaf, the gold that's in the ceiling of the Vatican. And I said to the guide then, if they just took everything out of the cases and liquidated them and took the gold out of the ceiling, there wouldn't be a hungry Catholic on the planet, and there shouldn't be. And so it's not this discussion that I'm having today about the Middle East is not about the historical battle or the historical envy or jealousy or irreconcilability between the Arabs and the Jews. It's about, as human beings, when is enough enough? When do we have enough? You know, I had an experience this past week. I'm very blessed. I have a very healthy daughter. I'm healthy. I have my material needs met. And I was shopping. I happened to have been at Walmart. And as I was leaving, I said to my daughter, let's just buy extra food. Let's buy baby food. Let's buy a bunch of things for babies, and let's find somebody who needs them. So we went shopping in the baby aisles. My daughter's 18. She thought it was a big kick. She always wanted a little sister, a little brother, and here she was finally getting to buy the stuff she always wanted to buy. We bought all kinds of things. I didn't buy age appropriate. I bought baby food at different stages. I bought diapers. I bought bibs. I bought Pampers. I bought all kinds of stuff. And it was in my trunk. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it. And I actually drove up the next day to the WIC office in Burlington County, and leave it to me. It was a holiday and WIC was closed, and so it stayed in my trunk. But then last week I had a speaking engagement. I guess it was about a week and a half ago. I had a speaking engagement here in South Jersey, and I mentioned that I had these items in my car, and that did anyone know anyone who could use them? And it happened that a woman who was at that speaking engagement was just beginning her own charitable organization where she wanted to help people who needed things, who were financially strapped and in difficult straits. And she sent me an email, and she made arrangements, and she picked everything up at my house. She sent me an email yesterday morning, and she described to me the young woman that she had encountered who has four children, who is unemployed, her husband's unemployed. They were incredibly strapped. They have a young infant. And she gave everything that I had bought to this young woman. And she said it allowed the young woman to smile for the first time in a long time. I cannot tell you the feeling that that email gave me. More than anything I've acquired anything I've bought, anything I've done in the last, I don't know how long, that feeling of, what is it? It's the opposite of greed. It's not only don't I need more, but I need less. Let me give it away. Let me take some of what I have and make it available to someone else. Don't confuse what I'm saying with the redistribution of wealth by any stretch of the imagination. I am not a proponent of government-sanctioned anything, pretty much. I don't think you can legislate morality, and I don't think you can legislate equality among people in terms of their financial resources. I think you can only legislate equal opportunity. So I'm not saying that I say we should redistribute wealth based on a government mandate. I say we should want to redistribute. We should want to redistribute excess wealth of our own from our hearts when we feel it, and with meaning, and with love. It is, in fact, the opposite of greed. So why? Why would I even want to do a show on this? Why have I spent the last 40 minutes talking about greed? And why do I liken it, or why did I lead into it talking about the tornado and what happened? And maybe we've caused the weather conditions through our thought patterns of constantly focusing on war and anger and revolution and rage and discontent, which is what the media generally feeds us on a daily basis, and what you put in is what you get back. Why spend 40 minutes on this? Because I really believe that how we think about money and how we think about one another and how we think about materialism and how we think about our connectedness to one another and how we think about our obligations to one another and actually how we think creates the world in which we live in a more literal sense than we can even imagine. You know, they say we use 2% of our brains, and I think Einstein used 10% of his. The power of the human mind. We are organic computers, you and me. That's what we are. And we run on the software that we install. And when we install fear and anger and discontent and envy and jealousy and endless consumption, also known as greed, when that's what we install, then that's what we create. Because, you know, when you put something in, when you load something into the computer and you hit the Enter key is that which makes it happen. And what happens is nothing more or less than what you input. So the Enter key on you and me are two words, I am. That's the Enter key. And what you put after those two words is who you are, because they're the choices that you make, and the choices that you make determine who you are, or at least they determine who you choose to be in this body at this time. So if I am needy, or if I am sick, or if I am greedy, or if I am cruel, or if I am angry, then that's what I get. That's what I get. If I am mad because I got fired, then I am mad. And what I create is more madness in the world. Because what we think is what we create. And what we put into word even becomes more real, because things start first with thought and then they manifest in speech and then they manifest through deed. There's three stages. You have an idea, you have a thought, you give it voice, and then you do it, or you follow through on it in some way. And that's how we create our reality. And so greed is a very dangerous concept to play with, because it sets up the potential for jealousy and rage. And that turns into a world that I fear we live in at the moment. And I think we're on the verge right now of a very remarkable split, because at the same time that we see the kinds of energies that create revolution in the Middle East, or perhaps create tornadoes in Missouri, that keeping our mind on revolution, we also see incredible acts of kindness by people who step up and volunteer, as they did after 9/11, as they have done in Missouri, as they've done all throughout Texas with the raging fires. as they did in Japan in almost unprecedented style and in unprecedented numbers. I think we see the best of humanity right now, and we see the worst of humanity right now. And so it's up to each one of us to decide which side we come down on. And I'm going to talk about what you and I can do personally to affect all of this right after this break.
Stefano's Ristorante Italiano of Mount Laurel, New Jersey, serves the finest authentic Sicilian cuisine with exciting dishes and a unique ambiance. At Stefano's, every dish is created using only the freshest, finest ingredients. Their delicious menu options and attention to detail create a truly enjoyable dining experience. For more than 20 years, chef and owner Paola Balsamo has presented her authentic family recipes to South Jersey. Stefano's features traditional Italian favorites and unique dishes wrapped in a cozy ambiance. They cater to special requests and offer a celiac specialty menu featuring gluten-free foods that are so delicious you'll never believe they're gluten-free. They also have a large variety of delicious pizza. Please feel free to bring a bottle of wine to enjoy with your meal. And if you're hosting a party, Stefano's offers on-site and off-site catering options. Their catering menu offers many options to please any taste, and their impeccable service ensures your event will be one to remember. They cater corporate functions, as well as birthdays, graduations, anniversaries, and many other special occasions. Stefano's Ristorante Italiano at 3815 Church Road in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Open at 11 a.m. Monday through Saturday, closed Sunday. Call 856-778-3663. That's 856-778-3663. And visit their website, stefanosristoranteitaliano.com. And mention An Hour of Gold to receive a 10% discount. You're listening to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now let's get back to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold.
Welcome back. Before break, I was talking to you about what you and I can do to sort of strengthen the muscle of a better world. How do we, on a personal level, make decisions and take actions that can help us move in the direction of the best of what humankind is capable of, instead of the worst? And as I said before break, I think we're standing at that crossroad right now. We're seeing a little of both. Everywhere we look, we're seeing the best of human nature, and then we're seeing the worst of human nature. Being compassionate, being aware, being awake, being connected to one another, being responsible in our actions every day by our choices is a muscle. It's a muscle that needs exercise. And if you don't exercise it, it can't get strong. It's like any other muscle, it'll atrophy. So when we exercise greed, when we make a big deal, when we put our attention day after day on an Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Strauss Kahn or violent revolution in the Middle East, those things that we put our mind on is basically those things are how we exercise our muscle. And that's the muscle we make strong. We make strong a revolution. We make strong the muscle of political deception. We make strong the muscle of force over women and over minorities and over people who are not as powerful as other people may be. It's not the muscle we want to exercise. It's the opposite of what we want to do. So what you do every day is you exercise the muscle that represents the qualities that you most want to be like. You know, Gandhi said, in order to change the world, you have to be the change that you want to see in the world. Be the change you want to see. And that happens in little increments every day by making decisions that are based on the highest outcome that you perceive for yourself and somebody else. they're minuscule. They happen on a daily basis. They're little things like just making sure if you've been given too much change at the checkout counter, you give it back to the teller. You don't try to keep it because you got a few extra pennies or an extra $5. We all run up against these instances every day, and they're small, but they add up. And they define us. All of our choices define us. Free will is that. Free will is the opportunity to self-define by every choice we make. So the first thing we do, the first thing we want to do is to be conscious around our choices. The second thing we want to do is to accept our portion. It doesn't mean you can't aspire to be something better than you are in the moment. It doesn't mean you can't seek greater financial comfort. It doesn't mean you can't seek notoriety if that's what you desire. What it means is to be incredibly grateful in the moment for what you have. You know, I don't know how many of you remember Maddie Stepanek, but Maddie Stepanek was a little boy, I believe he was 11 when he died. He was born with a very rare genetic disease, passed only through the female, so he got it from his mother. She contracted it as well. And he needed a breathing machine wherever he went. He could not exist without this very cumbersome breathing machine. And this little boy was the representative for one of the charities. I cannot remember the name of the particular illness that he had. It may come to me before the show is over. But the important point is, this little boy wrote poetry from the time he was 4, I think, and he wrote something like 22 anthologies by the time he died. And he was on Oprah, and he was on Larry King, and he was on many talk shows, and he spoke around the world. And every time I saw him, I marveled at him because he had this giant machine that he couldn't function without. He couldn't go anywhere without it, and he was always grateful for the breath of life. And his breath of life came only through the kindness of this machine. The operation of the machine is what literally gave him every breath of life. And so he valued every breath of life. And he simply wanted world peace. That was his giant aspiration. And he was grateful for his portion. He didn't focus on what he didn't have. He didn't focus on kids who could breathe without machines. He didn't focus on anything except the love in his heart and the gratitude for the gift of life. So Maddie Stepanek is a wonderful example of being grateful for your portion. How many of us have so much more than that and we're not grateful? We have so much more than that. We get up in the morning and we breathe and we don't even think about that that's a gift that makes everything else easy, no matter what you have to do. You can breathe without a machine. We're not grateful for those things, so we have to accept our portion. That's number two. And number three are random acts of kindness. Just do them, you know? It's what happened to me when I bought the extra supplies at Walmart and wound up giving them away to the young girl I'll never meet, but who I heard had a smile on her face for the first time in a long time. That changes the world because it's like whispering down the lane in the most positive sense. You do a good act, you do a good deed, and someone else smiles from it, and that allows them to be kind to someone else in their day, as opposed to be suffering and unable to be kind to someone else in their day because they're so busy trying to survive themselves. Random acts of kindness are incredible because not only do they help the recipient, they equally, if not more, help the doer or the giver. It is a universal law. 'Tis really greater to give than receive. It's not just a saying. You affect yourself physically. You affect your physical health and your mental health when you give of yourself freely, when you give from your heart with the sole intention of simply spreading love and making someone else's day or someone else's life better, no matter how small the gesture. So there are four things, right? Four things we can do every day. We can exercise the muscle. We can stand and give voice to what we know to be right. We can say enough is enough. There is a point at which I don't need more. And in fact, there may be a point at which I need less. accept our portion, be grateful for what we do have, and do random acts of kindness by helping others alleviate whatever they're going through so that they can whisper that down the lane. I think the movie was called Pay It Forward, and it was brilliant. And if you haven't seen it, make sure you see it, because it was a movie built on this concept of what doing something kind does and ultimately how that truly does come back to you. And it does. It doesn't always come back from where we sent it out, but it always, always comes back. You know, in thinking about Cain and Abel, which is the analogy I use to start this discussion about greed, there is a Native American proverb that I think sums it up better than almost anything I could say. And it goes like this. A Native American grandfather was talking to his young grandson, and he tells the boy that he has two wolves inside of him, and they're struggling with each other. The first wolf is the wolf of peace, love, and kindness. The other wolf is the wolf of fear, greed, and hatred. Which wolf will win, grandfather? Asks the young boy. Whichever one I feed, is the reply. We all have both of those wolves inside of us. The question is, which one will we feed? I know I work every day to make sure I'm starving the wolf of fear, greed, and hatred. Some days I do better than others. I'm human. But it's a conscious effort I make now because, as all light workers, I'm fully awake. And I hope you are too, because every thought you have, every action you take, every deed you perform matters and changes the world now more than ever. I leave you with the thought that I always leave you, but before I do, let me just encourage you to visit my website, carol.com. My book, The Lightworker's Handbook, is available to preview and purchase. You can purchase it in hard copy off the website or at barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. You can also purchase the ebook off my website. Also available on my site are motivational and inspirational CDs about going through fear, about going through change fearlessly, about what's your mission, what's your purpose in this life. There is a teen presentation for area high schools and colleges on depression, suicide, and bullying. And there is my blog, inspirational blog, that I write 5 days a week, as well as a teen advice column. So, as I leave you today and look forward to meeting you here again next week, I encourage you to remember two things. One, there is only one of us. And the second is, the only real healing is a return to love. See you next week here at 1360 AM WNJC. I'm Carol Gold, and this has been An Hour of Gold.